Back to another Meet Kevin report. So Apple reports earnings soon. Apple reports earnings on the 4th of May. And what should be pretty exciting is in June, they're having their WWDC. And we're finally expecting the unveil of Apple's new virtual reality / augmented reality headset. It's expected to cost quite a chunk of change, somewhere around $3,000. But something that I actually really support Apple on, if these rumors are true, is the idea that virtual reality probably won't be the near-term future, rather augmented reality will. When I was skiing just this last week, I was thinking to myself, my goodness, there's so much literal screen real estate when you're wearing massive goggles. Not saying you want to wear those all the time, obviously, but I was just thinking about it when you're skiing. There's so much screen real estate in here. We could easily have, like, you know, hey, is the ski school trying to call me or text me like a notification, hey, pick up your child because he's screaming his head off and he doesn't want to be here or whatever, right? Like, or weather notifications or warnings or a map of how to get around the map. Like, all of these things would be really cool from an augmented reality point of view. And something like that, I could actually see myself wanting to use. Now, the problem that I have is I believe that what Apple's going to do is they're going to have cameras forward so that they can project on that, like what your reality actually is in front of you. In my opinion, the issue with that is you're still going to have that feeling of looking through a screen, right? I think the longer term future needs to be some kind of almost transparent glass that could essentially be overlaid over, sort of like the old Google Glass style, because I'm not entirely convinced that having basically, I mean, you could do it yourself right now, right? Just put your phone on the video camera mode and go like this. And I mean, maybe, but like my eyes already feel like they're gonna be messed up from doing that, right? So who knows? That'll be really interesting. But I do agree with Apple, if the rumor is true, that augmented reality is going to be something that's more of a future for Apple. I think virtual reality, we're just not there yet. I've done many and used many of the new virtual reality headsets. My children have them. And it seems to be more of one of those novelty things where you use it for a few weeks, you kind of put it on, you do like the roller coaster rides, and you see, oh, this virtual reality is so good, you might experience motion sickness, and you're like, okay, maybe I'm feeling it. Maybe they're right. Maybe it is so good. I don't know. But it just doesn't seem yet super functional. And maybe that's because the platform just isn't there yet, right? In terms of the type of games you have are relatively limited. Yeah, you got some fitness games. You can do, you know, sort of the music games or whatever, like the old Guitar Hero and dance DDR style stuff. But I really feel like, you know, virtual reality is going to be epic in the future when I could play like my World of Warcraft character in virtual reality, but it actually feels like I'm there. But in order for that to be possible, I'd probably have to have some kind of like platform that I could stand on that could move, so I could kind of like run in one direction, right, and never hit the wall. And I think that'll come. But so don't get me wrong, big fan of virtual reality. I just think that's 10 years out. I'm excited, though, about Apple's announcement of augmented reality. Apparently, they're supposed to announce new MacBooks as well, iOS 17, macOS 14, a major watch update, which I just thought they came out with a major watch update. I've got the major watch update on right now, which I'll talk a little bit about this. But the headset is probably going to steal the show. One of the things that is interesting about the headset is Apple is talking about having essentially a way that that you can basically scroll, kind of like if you've ever used a watch before. Here, let me show you, because maybe you haven't before. So let me see if I can get focus on this stupid watch. There you go. See that little wheel? That's going to happen. If I block some more here. See this little wheel right here? So Apple is suggesting that if you turn this little wheel here, you might, with an augmented reality headset, be able to go from augmented reality to virtual reality as you kind of turn this sort of wheel around. And so that's what they're expecting might be like at the top of your head on this headset. So kind of think about it like, and then you dial the little wheel, and then you go from augmented reality to virtual reality. That seems pretty cool. Again, I'm not convinced that projecting with cameras what's actually really in front of me onto a virtual reality headset is going to be so convincingly great, specifically because What's it called? The Meta one does that. When you first, you know, when you first go around and you do the, you set your perimeter for the virtual reality headset, it shows you the augmented reality, right? It shows you you in your room, or all the things in your actual room and just overlays. It's not bad, but it still makes me feel like I'm looking into a little screen because, well, ultimately you are. So I think that'll be interesting to see what Apple comes out with and if that's a kind of product that creates any kind of headaches or pain over using. But AR, augmented reality, I think is the future for 2023 to 2030, and then virtual reality maybe thereafter. I get what Meta is doing, Facebook. They're trying to invest for the advertising world of 2030 plus. I just think they're burning too much cash flow today to be smart about that. Now, Apple's expected to lose money on their virtual and augmented reality headset as well. So we'll see what happens. Now, when it comes to the watch, I'll give a little bit of commentary on this. So up until probably about a week ago, I've been a big believer that this new rugged watch is really just the same as all the other watches. Mostly, it's just a little bit bigger. I haven't really noticed any functional difference in the fact that it's a little bit bigger. But one thing I will say that I've really enjoyed, because I generally wake up pretty early, and if I have to go into... or if I have to walk past my kids or I have to walk past Laura and my wife, then I don't want to be rude and wake them. And usually what I used to do in the past is I would just use the iPhone flashlight app and I would kind of like cover it a little bit. And I try to use that to kind of navigate around where I was going to get what I needed to do in the dark to not wake up other people. That was okay, but it was still probably too bright. If anybody remembers back in the 2007, 2008, actually it's probably more like 2007. In 2007, the first iPhone ever, there was no flashlight app. And so what you actually had to do back in 2007 is you would just open the video camera feature, push the flashlight button on, and then you had your flashlight. But they didn't have a separate button for that, which I thought was wild. But anyway, what's cool now about the rugged watch is they give you this third button, this little orange button over here. And what I did is I programmed that orange button to flashlight. So when I press the orange button, it turns the watch flashlight on, which is really good. And then I could go to strobe, which I never do, but I could also go to red light flashlight over here, which is pretty neat. And sometimes that functions. If I'm in super low light, I could go with the red light flashlight. Nobody sees it while they're sleeping. And the other one's a substantial step down from the iPhone. But I love it from that point of view because of the productivity element of the watch, just me being able to go into a dark room, click that one button, boom, my flashlight works pretty fast, especially since I don't always have my phone on me. Now, another thing that I like to do is the actual sort of main screen. My big productivity hacks on the watch, I'll show you. I'll actually throw it up. I'll throw up a screenshot that I just took. The way I like to organize it generally during the week, and you can change your home screen, obviously, regularly. On the weekends, sometimes I just like to have pictures of the kids. But this is usually my productivity screen on my watch. And what I like about this is I'll put at the bottom right whatever ticker I might be trading that day. So on Thursday, I was trading triple leveraged QQQ. So I kept QQQ on because my goal was for QQQ to get to 319 and then I was gonna take my 10Ds. And it started out at like 315 that day. So I'm like, I got a long way to go. We ended up getting the 319 and I took some nice 10Ds. So I was really happy about that. But anyway, so I keep that little tracker there at the corner. My kids regularly, the most effective way to sort of like mini discipline them, if you will, is by setting 1 minute timers. So if they're like super annoying and naggy, I set a 1 minute timer and then they get pissed and then they learn to stop bothering me. The cool thing about that at the bottom right or bottom mid there is I can push with one click and that 1 minute timer comes up. That I think is a little overpowered, so I like that. Let me see if I can put it a little closer to the camera here so you can see it a little bit more functionally. So if I pull out of this, all right, let's see. How am I gonna do this without it locking on me? All right, I think I got it. So we have our little watch cover here, and the cool thing is if I just go ahead and push that button. Look at that. Timer's right there. Like, how nice is that? And then obviously you can hit the little back arrow there and go to like 2 minute timer, 3 minute timer, whatever. But I made the button the 1 minute timer just to make it like super fast. Now I don't have to go find my phone, try to unbury the darn thing, which I usually generally leave docked, but I'm not always where the dock is. You know, sometimes I'm playing in the backyard with the kids and the phones are docked inside and it's like, oh, I really want to be able to set a 1 minute timer. So that's been really useful. The little music button is great because I could, if I go on a run, I could Bluetooth that really quickly to my whatever headphones I run with. Usually I use the Apple Pro Maxes just because the band is really soft rubber and I really enjoy that. Now someone from Israel is calling. Great. Then we've got the little calendar thing. Super useful to have that calendar right in my face. Otherwise, I'm going to miss it. If I don't have my calendar event like right there, I'm going to miss it. So that's pretty useful. Obviously, date, time. And then recently I put the calculator at the top, which has been pretty functional for me, mostly because there's so many times I just need to do some quick math. And oftentimes I'm on a run and I'm like, oh, I wonder, you know, if this happens, that happens, or this with a stock or something I'm trading or whatever, and I just need some quick math. And it's beyond the level of mental math, or I want some more accuracy. My goodness, the little Apple Watch calculator has actually been surprisingly functional. So I've come to like the watch a little bit more and more over time. But I think you could do this with the non-ruggeds as well. I don't know if you get as much screen real estate to have all of these buttons here. But that one's been pretty functional for me. That's the modular setting on the watch. So they're useful. You know, I know a lot of people are pretty anti-Apple. They don't like Apple products or the Apple ecosystem. And I get it. You know, there's some things that are quite different. I think eventually everybody will be a blue texter. But don't get me wrong. There are definitely some things you need a PC for, like gaming. Gaming, unfortunately, Apple just has never caught up with for PC games or you know, whatever it is, compatibility, I don't know, but maybe one day we'll be able to actually game on a Mac. But let me put it this way, I got one of those the Mac Pros, those computers, they're like $10,000. I bought it as a workstation like 4 years ago, and I'm like, this is gonna be great, it's gonna be so wonderful. First of all, it wasn't. It was a waste of money. I was really disappointed about that. But I tried to run Rust on it, the video game Rust, and I compared to Lauren's $1,200 gaming computer, because she games so little, she's like, just give me the cheap one on Amazon. Hers had like three times the graphics settings that mine had. It's just, it's not possible yet to game on the Macs. Now maybe, that's a good point. Someone here says, new cloud gaming, maybe. Cloud gaming, you have to be careful. So I've done a bit of cloud gaming. I actually bring, oftentimes I try when we go on trips, I'll bring like a little iPhone or Android remote control where I could stick my phone in it, because I do have an Android as well. And then we can cloud game. And it's great when you have good internet, obviously, right? Cloud gaming. But that's been a little bit challenging for us, because usually when I use the remote control and where you plug your phone in, I'm traveling. And when you're traveling, the internet usually sucks. So sometimes that's a little annoying. If you were to invest in augmented reality, would you look at Snapchat? You know, I don't know that much about Snapchat. Snapchat is very much dedicated to, I shouldn't say dedicated to, but it's very much used by a substantially younger demographic. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like, I'm not age discriminating here. I'm just saying, yeah, it ain't me. I don't understand. That seems weird, because I feel like as a millennial, I'm still supposed to be like that younger generation that everybody makes fun of. But I'm not that younger generation anymore. It's weird. You know, it's like, now it's Gen Z. And I'm like, okay. I mean, like, a lot of people I employ are Gen Z. And I'm like, they're cool. Like, they're normal people. Like, they're awesome. Like, I get along with them just like I get along with millennials. It's not like, all of a sudden, they're a different breed of human. You know, so I think everybody's the same. I don't know. I haven't incorporated Snap into my life. But then again, you know, I could just be different in that sense, because I did just recently delete TikTok, Twitter, and probably gonna delete Instagram next for my phone. Mostly because what I'll do is I'll go like I'll go on Twitter. I'm not going to not use the apps, but I'll do it when I'm in the office and I can be on a computer, which sounds insane, I know. But what I found myself doing IRL in real life, what I found myself doing is literally if I had TikTok or Twitter on my phone, every second I was like in a conversation or whatever, or at a red light, at a stoplight or whatever, it was like, oh, what's the latest refresh, TikTok or Twitter, refresh. And it's just like, oh God, no, way too addicting. And it was, it just not useful. Like I found these apps were really useful for me when, and still are, when I go on them and I get like a scheduled summary, right? I have to say, that is something that Apple has done extremely well. The scheduled summaries are probably my most favorite tool out of the Apple ecosystem right now, because they help me so much with basically just organizing what I'm doing. But notifications are a pain. I've talked about that a lot before on this channel, how notifications are just horrible, because you could be in the middle of doing something and you're constantly just like, oh God, I gotta answer the phone. Oh God, I gotta respond to that text. Like the worst and most annoying thing is when you go into like a conference or something and everybody's got like their chime on for their text messages. It's just like so anxiety inducing. It's like, turn that crap off. Like, do you really need to drop everything you're doing when you're interacting with other people to like instantly respond? Now, don't get me wrong. There are some things, the answer to that is absolutely, right? Of course. But I don't think that's necessary for everything. So, I think you could sort of create like you could create VIPs. Like if your wife calls you or your kid's school is calling you, great. Set a VIP, like put them in the little VIP category. But otherwise you have to respond to everything instantly. God, no, it's terrible for productivity. But here's an example of a notification summary. Hopefully I don't dox myself. But anyway, so like, this is the next summary that I think I've set for like 8:30 a.m. And so this one's not actually too long, just because I think I got the last notification at like 6 a.m. But anyway, what it basically does is it gives me this little collapsible segment that, rather than getting all my notifications at once, it just basically collapses all these notifications into little summaries. So here, let me show it to you like this. So at the bottom, you could see sleep cycle and recommended colon funny. Those are just regular notifications, right? But over here, these summaries, I could click on just one notification and then it expands all of these notification summaries for me. This really functional, really cool. And then it'll even, you know, generally collapse within certain, like if there are five Bloomberg articles, it'll collapse, nest them all onto Bloomberg and you can separately expand those. That's been an amazing productivity hack. Because then again, you're not missing all of those notifications. Instead, they're bundled at a time where it's convenient for you to sit down and go through them. You know, personally, I think the easiest time to do email is not every minute an email comes in, but when you sit down and you're like, all right, I got all my emails ready. Boom, 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 boom. You bang out all your emails. You bang out all your Twittering. You bang out all your notifications. And then you go do normal stuff. But constantly, like, reacting to notification, quite frankly, is just idiotic and terrible for productivity. Sorry, I'm not trying to call people, you know, idiots here. Mm-hmm. So, that is my take on Apple. Big fan. Very excited, by the way, about the next Apple event. But then again, I'm always excited about Apple products. And then usually you kind of just like, they come out with a product and it's like, eh, all right. Like everybody gets super excited around the time of the releases and then you kind of just incorporate it into your life and it's like not that different. Like I will say, the iPhone 14, I was so jazzed. I'm like, this is gonna be the iPhone that like actually makes me excited about upgrading. Oh my gosh, the always on display. Oh my gosh. It's not really that different from my 13. I have the 13. It's actually sitting in a dock right next to it. The one thing I do like is that always on display. I will say that is nice, because I don't have to tap the darn other thing to sort of wake it up. But beyond that, it's basically the same. In fact, I did a video comparing the iPhone 13 to 14 camera on a gimbal. You don't even need to use a gimbal, by the way, anymore these days. That I will say is insane. Like, the gimbal market, when it comes to iPhones, I don't know how they're not out of business yet. I'll show you an example. But anyway, the quality is, I did not notice that much of a difference at all. If anything, it was challenging for me to notice a difference between the 13 and the 14. But the handheld technology now in some of these phones is just amazing. I'll show you. Oh yeah, this is a really good example. Okay, let me show you this little video clip here, and I think you'll enjoy it, because so this was a video clip of me, probably Jack, on it, like his third day ever of skiing. So it's not like super advanced. We're on like a green slope or whatever, but we go down the sort of off side where you have all the little bumps and the trees or whatever, and I'll show you that here. So what I want you to see is just basically how smooth this camera feels. So here's Jack and his instructor, and this is free hand. Like, there's no gimbal here. This is crazy. This is me, you know, skiing up to him or skiing behind him or whatever, and it's crazy how stable the footage is these days. I also did some shots in cinematic mode, although I noticed when I was in cinematic mode, you had a little bit more of the AI wasn't that great yet for the technology for keeping your focus set. But let me get some more shots here as I stumble up this little tree to get a shot of Jack. There we go. I mean, I think this is amazing. To think this is in your pocket and it's so smooth. I think I actually follow him here through the bumps and you'll be able to see a little bit more, but I don't quite remember. Yeah, let me see here. You'll be able to get to see a little bit more, I think, of motion following, which is pretty neat. But yeah, I used to have to do this stuff with a gimbal, which was always a pain in the butt because then the gimbal would unbalance and then wonky around or something like that. But for an iPhone, I don't know. This is awesome. So, big fan. Yeah, look at that. Ah, good job, Jack. I don't know. Like, really cool. That's all I can say. I mean, I know that camera technology has just gotten good even in Androids, right? So it's not just, hey, look, there's me. It's not just the iPhone that does this sort of stuff. I don't really know what I'm doing here. I think I'm getting ready to turn it off. Yeah. Anyway, okay, so camera tech, fantastic. But I don't think anybody really disputes that anymore these days. I do worry a little bit about DJI and their iPhone gimbal market. But other than that, yeah, really cool. So, all right. Let's go ahead and, end that segment. So, hopefully you enjoyed that segment on Apple. Because I'm excited about the augmented reality, not convinced yet on virtual reality, but augmented, I'm interested. I could be really convinced. I'm tempted. I'm almost tempted to buy one, which is scary, because I don't know, first gen from Apple, I don't know, we'll see. And then again, what are you going to do with it? I don't know, can I go on a run with it? They say it has a huge detached battery pack. I don't want to go on a run with that. So we'll see. Which app was the notification summary? That seems interesting. It's actually under the notification setting on your phone. So it's built in. It's not a separate app. But yes, the notification summary is a lifesaver. Really, really good. All right. Next segment. So that was the Apple segment, eh? Oh, stuttering a YouTube thing? Yeah, who knows how it ended up feeding through in a YouTube, given that that was recorded live, you know, I don't know. Okay, let's go with the next segment we've got to touch on is, oh, this is a good one. Oh yeah, this one will be fun. All right. Well, folks, are we experiencing a tale of two cities? Are we going into a recession? And is inflation going to stay stickier than anyone expects? Or is the recession already over? That's an interesting thought. After all, consider that in the first quarter of 2022, real GDP was negative 1.6%. In the second quarter of 2022, real GDP was negative 0.6%. That sets up the technical definition for a, quote, technical recession, two quarters of negative GDP in a row. Now, Democrats in the White House will say, nah, that wasn't actually a recession. Whereas other people say, oh, how convenient for you to change the definition of recession. The facts are what they are. We had negative real GDP for two quarters in a row. Whatever you want to call that, fine. But there is now an argument being made that the bottom is in. Knock on wood, I'm not saying it. Bloomberg Intelligence is saying the bottom might be in. Bloomberg Intelligence has something known as the Economic Regime Index. And the Economic Regime Index suggests the worst economic pain in this market happened a few months ago. And that things may not actually be as bad as they seem. And maybe the stock market realizes that. And maybe that's why the stock market is actually up 20% since October. That's the S&P 500. Year to date, the S&P is up over 7%. The NASDAQ is up over 20%. Some exchange-traded funds that are more tech-focused, sometimes pricing power-focused, are up over 30% in some cases. There are some real opportunities that have happened. You look at Bitcoin. Bitcoin and Ethereum are up somewhere 80% since the beginning of the year. It's phenomenal. Yet, despite this, the bears are present. And so I want to talk about both the bears and the bulls in this video. The bears like to point to this chart and say, well, wait a second here. Investors have withdrawn cash from U.S. equities for 11 out of 15 weeks this year. That seems bearish. In fact, you could see those withdrawal periods here. You could also see this massive tax loss harvesting event here, which is the blue line showing you a massive decline in the last week of December. Excuse me. All right. So why is so much cash being withdrawn from equities? And why then is the market still slowly trending up? Well, some argue that cash is being withdrawn because clearly the earnings recession is afoot. Morgan Stanley's Mike Wilson will have you know that the earnings recession is coming. Companies are going to miss their forecasts, which are already low. They're going to miss on EPS, and we're going to go into a real S&P 500 decline. We're going back to 3,200. We're going down 20, 30%. Now, why do they say that? Well, in part because you do have the S&P 500 heavily exposed to things like consumer staples and healthcare stocks, which in my opinion, as well as REITs, which in my opinion won't do so well in 2023. I think they're likely to experience the real earnings recession, though lately they've been propped up by some mega tech. Now, there's also the argument that, hey, well, people are taking their money out of the stock market because you could get 4 to 5% on money market funds. And hell, well, if you've got so much money that you can make in money market funds, if you can make 4 to 5%, why would you risk any of your hard-earned cash in the stock market? Just take a 4 to 5% risk-free return and call it a day. Yes, maybe. But remember, a 4 to 5% return actually is your payment for opportunity, right? It is an opportunity cost. Somebody who is investing and the 4 to 5% yields might potentially be missing out on 20, 30, 40, 50% returns in the stock market. However, they might also avoid another 20% downside in the event that occurs, right? So this cash withdrawal chart, not that fantastic, especially when you couple it with the fear that it's possible inflation will remain a lot stickier than we expect. In fact, here's a piece from the Wall Street Journal, which talks about economists turning more pessimistic on inflation. And really what they're talking about is how economists have been surveyed, and all of a sudden economists actually expect inflation to end the year up at 3.53% versus 3.1% in January. And the number of economists thinking that rates are going to get cut by the end of the year has flip-flopped from a majority to now only 39% of economists. So part of that is because a lot of economists believe inflation will be higher for longer. And this is a pretty typical bear argument that people make. This chart, by the way, shows you the dark blue line on top, which is the April forecast for inflation, and the light blue line being the January forecast. I tried to throw in what I call the sort of like wedge in orange here, and that's really just to show you where inflation might be higher. See this little extra difference here? This is what the market has to price in, is higher for longer inflation, right? And that's negative for the stock market, obviously, or is it though? And see, this is where, even though consumer expectations for inflation via the Consumer Sentiment Survey at the University of Michigan just popped up to its highest level since 2020, now a lot of folks are saying, hey, maybe we are going to have higher inflation for longer. Maybe that does mean rates are going to be higher for longer. Even though all of that might be true, the Bloomberg Intelligence Economic Regime Index suggests most of the pain is already over. And when we align what the S&P 500 forward returns could be based on what has happened since the 1970s, might be time to turn bullish. Now, this follows the Economic Thrust Index, which we talked about just in the last 2 days, where the Economic Thrust Index is basically one of the most reliable signals for just being past the bottom and on an uptrend. And that Economic Thrust signal is saying, we're here, it's time to buy, baby. Now, who knows? But take a look at this. This is the Economic Regime Index. And I'll explain it because at first it looks a little funky. So what you want to do is you want to zoom in over here to the right. And what this does is it measures the change in momentum of things like manufacturing, industrial capacity, consumerism, sentiment. It puts all these data sets together. And what you could see historically here, this chart goes all the way back to 1970. So then you've got the 1970s, the mid-70s recession, the late 70s recession, the early 80s recession, right? Yada, yada, yada. What you can see is that this chart usually bottoms at the end of a recession. Look at that. Notice how it leaves the bottom at the end of a recession. It bounces along that bottom in the recession, but the recession is almost always over by the time it flip-flops. See that? Look at that. That's interesting. So where are we right now? Oh, crap. Look at that. We're out of the potential bottom territory there. So is it then possible that when recession designers, dare I say that word, the Bureau of Economic Research ends up deciding, the National Bureau of Economic Research, the NBER, ends up deciding, okay, yep, we were officially in a recession from Q1 2022 to Q1 2023, or even Q4 2022, what they might end up doing is they might end up drawing this. Oops, let's use a little bit of a smaller pencil here. Imagine this. How funky would this be if the recession ended right there? We drew this box. There we go. What if that ends up being the recession, right? What if 2022 was the recession? And this economic model, just like it's been correct in the past, correctly signals that we have already passed the recessionary pain and that any other kind of future hiccups are potentially already priced in to the market. Now, we're still low, right? Don't get me wrong. We're still substantially low here, and we're still in that sort of volatile area here. But it's somewhat interesting. And remember, you never want to rely on just one data set. In my opinion, you want to look at the fundamentals of companies. I'm a big fan of looking for high free cash flow companies, companies with high pricing power, and companies with high free cash flow and pricing power that are also getting stimulus checks. I hate to say it, but the government is basically handing out stimulus checks to some of the richest companies in the world. Taiwan Semiconductors, Intel, Tesla, NVIDIA, AMD, Enphase. It's ridiculous. But as an investor, I'm like, well, I'm not going to say no to the free money. Nobody should. That would be stupid. But take a look at this. This is the economic regime index for the past 6 months. That is, it's a 6 month moving average, right? Now, a moving average is going to be less reactive to the day-to-day fluctuations. So you'll notice the bottom blue segment is a lot lower, or a lot smoother, I should say. But what it shows is that we've hit that white line on the bottom. That white line on the bottom, let me highlight that for you. That white line down here is really the bottom, almost the bottom. Here in 2008, we went past it, right? So in this segment here, we went a little past it. But typically, this has actually indicated a bottom, hitting that little white line. In the 70s, in the 80s, in the early 90s, and look at what the 6 month moving average just hit. It's interesting. So, what do S&P 500 returns usually do? Now, again, I want to just briefly caution when we talk about these S&P 500 returns, briefly just want to give a caution that I'm not the biggest fan of the S&P 500 right now. That's just my opinion. I think if you go through the top 60 stocks in the S&P 500, there are too many of them that are exposed to commodities, staples, healthcare that, in my opinion, it's just my opinion, aren't actually going to do as well as they potentially could going forward. So that's where I'd rather be focusing my energy and attention, specifically on pricing power style stocks, a lot of those chips, techs, but you've heard that all before, right? So that's I don't want to sound redundant here. But what I do want to focus on is really the S&P 500 forward returns that Bloomberg is projecting. Now, who knows? These are just projections, so we don't know. But Bloomberg's S&P 500 forward returns are the following. So after that index hits its bottom, Bloomberg estimates that the S&P 500 historical average between 1970 to 2023, 3 months forward after this economic index hits its bottom, out of 8 recessions, it has only been negative once on a 3 month forward basis. That's pretty impressive. Those are good odds. I mean, 7 out of 8 times, this is positive. The S&P 500 is actually positive in a 3 month period. In addition to that, if you look at 6 months forward, you're also looking at being positive 7 out of 8 times, which is also quite impressive. And then if you look at the 1 year forward, also 7 out of 8 times, you're positive. But not only are you positive 7 out of 8 times, look at the magnitude at which you're positive. This is what's really impressive. I mean, you're looking at in 1980 right here, this is 2009 and 2020. 2009 and 2020, you were positive to the tune of about 40% in the 1 year forward. You know, the averages over here would be closer to about 7% average up on a 3 month forward. A little bit more dicey on the 6 month, which somewhat potentially aligns with this fear that, oh no, we're going to have like a Q3 recession or whatever. But overall, these signals are pretty bullish, despite the fact that there are fears inflation might remain a lot higher than people expect. Now, the other graph that I wanted to show you is the one that we've talked about previously, and that's the Kopach Index. So if you wanted to see that as an index that was potentially flashing an inflection of, okay, here we go, like this is the sign to be up, you could Google that one yourself, or you could watch a video that I posted just a couple days ago talking about the Kopach Index. In fact, I want to say I posted that on the 14th or the 13th, just so you could have the reference to it. It was the 14th or the 13th, and let's see, it was actually probably the 13th. Oh yeah, here it is. I believe I called it Massive Flip Coming to Stocks. Yes, that's where it was. Massive Flip Coming to Stocks. You could watch that video in detail if you really want your like bullish tingleness to trigger, watch that. If you're a bear, you probably don't want to watch this, because this Kopach signal here, whatever, Kopach signal, is indicating some bullishness that historically has fired almost always at the bottom It has pre-fired, I think, once in the past. Actually has, no, I don't think this one's ever pre-fired. Yeah, look at this. And it's not trying to time the bottom. It triggers just past the bottom. Almost every single time it triggers just past the bottom. I think there was another index that we looked at. Let me see here. The other index. Yeah, this was the other index we looked at. This was the thrust index. This one had a few misfirings. So there are a few times the thrust index actually fired a little too early. But the Kapok was almost always right in suggesting we were just past the bottom. So maybe the bottom is in. Now, to me, that's pretty dang exciting because obviously I believe in the Nike Swoosh style recovery. I think it's going to be volatile, but I agree. I think the worst is behind us. It's going to take a lot of new Paul Volcker style fear for us to get back to the bottom. For the Bears, sorry. For the Bulls, pretty excited and I'm happy for y'all. So we'll see what happens over the next 6 to 12 months here. Well, let's just say I'm pretty bullish. Check out StreamYard, by the way. MattKevin.com/StreamYard. StreamYard, by the way, helps me make all my live streams and pretty much all my videos. They let me put banners up. They're really phenomenal and fantastic. So make sure you check out StreamYard. It's a sponsor of the channel, paid promo. Go to MattKevin.com/StreamYard. Or just go to my website, MeetKevin.com. Alrighty. Next segment. What do we want to talk about next? So that's a fun one. That's a lot. Oh, we had a couple other things here. Oh, man. Desmond says, we're in a complacency stage. Where's your evidence? Give me some evidence. Come on, let's debate. I want to take your evidence, and I just want it all over. Give me the evidence. Because I want to absorb it. I want to feel it. Because I don't feel it right now. I feel nothing. The evidence is too soft. All right. Now, what else? All right. Let's see here. Now, they are going to talk about something else. I think this is just like designed to be a good starting point for something here. NVIDIA will be $100 Wednesday when China invades Taiwan. Yes. So, look at REIT index. Come on, man. You can't possibly tell me that the entire market is going to go dumb because of REITs. Dude. Of course REITs are selling off. Commercial real estate is trash right now. Yeah, it's probably going to anchor real estate prices down. But real estate almost always lags the stock market. There's so little correlation between what happens in the stocks and real estate. It's shocking. So that's not evidence. Actual bullish evidence is too soft. Well, where's your bearish evidence then? Where is it? How many earnings calls have you read that are reiterating your fears? Not sure if you followed Wall Street silver scams from extraction to extortion to racism. So if you want to, what is this, Silver Deegan Club, you're curious. Well, thank you for shouting out the Silver Deegan Club twice. You donated $10 before and $5 now. How long did I date before marriage? Yes. Actually, I never dated. I immediately fell in love in high school, never looked back, and then ended up having two children and moving out to California and living happily ever after. Have you seen, knock on wood, have you seen the Treasury 10-year and the 2-year? Oh, the inversion. You know, the problem with the inverted yield curve, because the inverted yield curve is the strongest argument the bears have. It's the strongest argument. That's the best argument you have. You finally found it. You finally found the best argument the bears have. It's basically the only argument the bears have. But why about the yield curve? In fairness, yes, the yield curve doesn't look very good. However, it is possible to argue that the yield curve is so horribly inverted because inflation is so high right now, requiring higher yields on treasuries today than in the future. Now, you might ask yourself, well, why was that same argument not possible in the 70s? Well, because people didn't think inflation was going to go away. Today, nobody actually thinks inflation is going to stay high for very long. So it's entirely possible that because of the distortions of inflation, the yield curve could actually, potentially even for the first time ever, be signaling a massive misfiring. Because remember how the bond market functions. The bond market is a function of people wanting as real of a return as possible. So if inflation is 7%, they're not going to buy treasuries unless they're getting substantially rewarded for buying those treasuries. So the yields have to go to 4%, basically, 4 to 5% for people to buy them. And then you get an equilibrium. Whereas nobody actually thinks inflation is going to be this high in 10 years. So people are like, I'll take 3% on the 10-year or whatever, right? Or 3.3% or whatever. Yes, that looks inverted because it is inverted. But from a market dynamic point of view, it actually makes sense. It's logical. Now, I understand it's dangerous to say, you know, oh, things are different this time. I get it. Like, I'm always the person who warns of that, right? I'm just saying there is a plausible explanation as to why the inverted yield curve is broken. And I'm not suggesting it is. That's why I say I think that is the best bear argument the bears have. In fact, I personally think we'll probably have a sort of second wave, shallow recession. Like, I think the inverted yield curve will end up still being correct, but not to the severity of some of the recessions of the past. So, but I think the stock market's already heavily priced in the odds, you know, 60 to 80% odds that we have another little shallow recession. So I think you might look at 2022 and go, okay, we had a recessionary time. And then you might look at the end of 23 and early 24 as a recessionary time. And so you kind of have this double dip. But the stock market could Nike swoosh right through that. And the depth of the inversion could solely be driven by market dynamics related to the bond market. But again, most people, I don't think have a complete understanding of the bond market. And I'm not saying I do. You know, I don't trade bonds. I don't really care about trading bonds. I like equities and real estate. That's what I like. That's what I do. I don't do bonds and I don't do commodities. It just is what it is. But, you know, I mean, think about it. If you're in 1980, oops, if you're in 1980, right, the last time the inverted yield curve was this bad, and you're like, oh my gosh, inflation's never going to go down below 15%, right? Well, you're going to need this massive, massive compensation, not only in the near term, but, you know, maybe it'll be lower in the long term, right? But the expectations were such that your requirement for compensation on treasuries was so extreme back in the 1980s. And you had, therefore, this massive inversion, much like you do today, right? And the difference was that then you had expectations that were broken, which ended up leading to actually a solid recession to show and prove that, hey, wait a minute, we got to get rid of inflation and we're going to push us into a recession to do so. Now, interestingly, if you look at the early 1980s, the real estate market barely flinched. I think it went flat in the early 80s, but it never actually plummeted in the early 80s. So yes, the inverted yield curve tends to signal a recession. And yes, during high periods of inflation, you could actually distort the extremeness of the inverted yield curve. Let's look at let's see what we can see going back to the 1980s. And let's see how far we can go back. Let's go look at real estate. So let's look at Case Shiller, St. Louis Red. We'll go ahead and pull up a chart here. Let's go back and then let's look at the 80s. And then let's see if we, let's just go back to 88. Are you serious? What trash? Oh, that's a bummer. I really need a chart that goes back to the early 80s. But that we not have. What a ripoff. They hide the data from us. How dare they hide the data from us? Okay, fine. We'll look at something else. Here we go. 100-year historical chart for the Dow Jones. So let's look at this together. Let's go to the 100-year. And can we get one of these for real estate? No. 100-year Case Shiller real estate. No, you just can't get them. Oh, what a ripoff. Oh, here we go. Case-Shiller 100-year chart. All right, let's see here. So... I cannot get a good chart. Anyway, I'll make a video on it. I'll get some charts and I'll show the annual returns on real estate. But I do think it's very interesting. So I'll follow up on that inverted yield curve argument, and I'll get some pieces from the early 80s on that. I think that's very interesting. So I'm gonna write that down because I want to get to the bottom of that, but I just can't get the charts right now, and I don't want to waste your time. Charts on early 80s recession. All right, so we'll take a look at that. Alrighty. I love how Bassomatic says there's more flip-flopping, when reality is I've been extremely consistent. Like, I think sometimes people are like, they don't even understand what's going on, and then they just say stuff that doesn't even make sense. Alright, so where did we do that? Alright. Next. All right. So the next topic that I wanted to touch on. Oh, yeah. This was more of like a story. You've consistently ride the fence. I completely disagree with you. I'm in the middle when it comes to politics, so I don't know if you're like commingling two different things. But I've been extremely clear with my attitude on the stock market. Always. I'm extremely clear about that. Like, when I sold in January of 2022, I told everyone exactly what my thesis was. And I was made fun of for going from such a consistent mentality to changing directions, right? And then I made it very clear when I changed directions again and started opening back up to stocks and then the Nike swoosh theory. Like, this is an evolution, right? It's not, are you just a title reader? Like, it's just not logical. Like, if you go through the actual content, like, you're missing the boat massively. So, okay, anyway. So, let's go ahead and... thumbnails too. Yeah, I mean, who cares? Who gives a shit? Like, let's be real here. Do you really come to like, scroll through my YouTube channel to read the titles? If you do that, that's your fault. Like, go scroll on Twitter if you want to read titles. Don't scroll on YouTube. But I don't think most people who are here do that. I think most people who come on YouTube are smart people who are interested in some new perspective on something. And they look for value. And I think smart people do that. They look for value. And you don't get value in titles. Anyone who's like, yeah, but your titles are negative. It's just a moron. Welcome to YouTube. You be a content creator. All right. So, next, we got to tell a story. Story time. So now I've got to tell a little story. But it's a story that hit me pretty hard yesterday. So yesterday, where was I? Oh, that's right. Yesterday, I went shooting. See, I have a little leftover bullet here from the range. So I went shooting, I went to an outdoor range in a mining quarry, and I had this small group lesson, and we go out to a mining quarry, it's really cool, and the weather was amazing, it's out here in California. And I was with these two dudes, they almost looked like they could have both been cops, but I think one was like a surgeon, and the other was like a massive, like nationwide contractor, like an electrical contractor. So it was really, really cool. These guys, they were so nice and they were really insightful. But I'll tell you, I spent a lot of time while I was there relatively quiet because it was me, them two, and the instructor, the instructors, we'll say. And what was really eye-opening to me, and it was almost like chilling, like bone chilling to me. It was really scary. It was probably honestly one of the saddest things I've heard in my life, or maybe even like, dare I say, the scariest thing in my life. So we get in the Sprinter van, And what is this, a 9 mil? This is a 40 holo right here. Anyway. All right. So, saddest thing. So, I get in the van, and the entire ride to the mining quarry, both of them, who are probably like 65, both of them are like, yeah, so-and-so just passed away from cancer. And the other one's like, oh, I'm sorry. And then, you know, then he's like, my wife just had a stroke and, you know, she's recovering. And then the other guy's like, I just got over prostate cancer. And my wife, you know, she's going through chemo. She thought she was going to be done. She's on round 11 out of 15 of chemo's, lost like 20 pounds. And she's like, I'm almost through. I've almost made it. And now the doctor's like, we're going to have to keep going. And these people, they're like, you know, the wife and the husband, one of them, they're surgeons. And, you know, one of the things they said hit me so hard. They're like, did you think we would work for 40 years just to have our retirement be spent like this? And what they were saying was, did you think we would go to basically med school for 12 years and then be surgeons for 10 years and work their ass off, you know, basically for a combined 40 years to finally have the freedom of retirement only to be dealing with the hell of basically age and ailments and whether it's a lack of energy or cancer recoveries or the inability to travel because of treatments or friends and family dying or all this like craziness. And I'm just like, this is like literally the saddest place I could be right now. But it was actually probably the best place to be because I'm 31 and it hit me really hard because I'm like, damn, you know, that goes to show that like you should do whatever you can and not say no to experiences in your life when you can have the experiences. You know, I think so many of us, especially in the financial community, we get so like tight sometimes with money. It's like, no, I don't want to spend money on that. I want to save because I want my investments to grow. But really what you're doing when you're constantly saving for retirement is you're borrowing from today to give to an uncertain future. And that's really scary. That's really scary. And it's real life, you know, but it's scary. And so my thinking, you know, the wake-up call to me has been, and I felt this way probably more for like the last year, maybe since I turned 30, is this idea of like, hey, you got to make sure that you take advantage of all the experiences that you can because the future is uncertain and you want to get in whatever you can now. If you have the energy to have fun and work hard but play hard, do it. And I think that's something that I've always really lived by is the idea of it's okay to work hard. Like, I'm not saying don't grind. I'm not saying don't invest. I'm not saying don't, you know, work overtime. I'm okay with that. Like, I work a lot. I work somewhere around 100 hours a week. And just, like, it's always work. And maybe there's 15 hours on a regular week for family, right? That's like a couple hours a day. It's not a lot. It's mostly just work. And that's because I've got three different jobs. It's running an ETF, the financial advising side, the real estate startup, YouTube and social media, and coordinating teams around that. It's a lot of work. But I'm also willing to make sure that when I travel with family, we have a blast. I mean, I have to say, I just went to, Deer Valley. I actually briefly went skiing with Ross, but I had a blast skiing with my 5-year-old, my 7-year-old, my wife, and we had a great time. You know, you're going in the pool and the spa when it's like freezing outside, but you know, it's all just fogged up because they keep the water temperature so hot. So everything looks like it's steaming, it's just water vapor. It's not actually steam. But anyway, it's, you know, those are the sort of experiences that you want to share with the people around you that you love and care about and friends and family. And so I think it's really good, even though we're always talking about finance, to remember, like, not everything in your life has to be you taking the back seat to really good experiences because you're trying to save a few extra bucks. Like, personally, I cringe when people are like, oh, no, I don't want to spend money on, like, a Starbucks. I just... it makes me want to vomit. I'm like, really? You think so little of yourself that you can't work a little harder to make that up? Or like, really? You're going to go to Disney World and you're not going to pay for the fast tickets or whatever they call them? Like, really? You're gonna spend your time in the line if you have the ability to afford it? Like, what are you doing? Your time is so valuable. And I think that experience of when I went shooting with the folks, it really made me realize, like, wow, you know, you got to double down on making sure you're taking those moments and those experiences, because you don't know how long you're going to be able to anymore. I mean, when we did running shooting drills, one of the guys, he couldn't do them. And it's like, I'm going to sit out the running shooting drills. And I'm like, what the hell? I didn't say that, obviously, but I'm just thinking to myself, like, I don't want to be 65 and then be like, oh, I got to sit out the running shooting drills because I can't run. And I'm like, that sucks. You know, like, I don't know. It hit me pretty hard. It was just this pretty wild sort of wake-up call. Like, I think that line was so impactful about not only them talking about all these people dying, which is obviously terrible, and all these people having these ailments, but also just the line of, did you imagine we'd work our whole lives just to spend our retirement like this? And it's like, because what do you have in retirement? A number, right? You have a number and yourself. That's what you have when you retire, yourself and a number. And like, you have to be able to do something with that number, whether it's $5 million, $1 million, $10 million, $100 million. You have to be able to function and do something. If you can, it's like, what was the point? So have some fun as you go through the journey. My father-in-law always calls it the journey. Like, you don't want to be the person, and I'm guilty of this too, where like you get in the car to go on a road trip and you're so focused on like getting there that you're missing the fun of like stopping at that funky gas station in the middle of nowhere, like the entertainment that happens along the way, because you're so anxious to get to the destination. The problem is, if you're so anxious to get to the destination, well, the destination, let's put it this way, the destination life ain't that great. Like, where you're going is like game over, right? Don't I have a sound clip of this here?
Game over.
Yeah, like, that's the destination. So you gotta enjoy the ups and downs, you know,
lost the lead.
And, you know, a little bit of manipulation along the way. Check out the programs on Building Wealth, link down below. I have to do that right after, you know, it's a Age of Empires. Anyway, that was pretty impactful to me. And then, you know, then there's just like unfairness that happens. I mean, then you see people that, you know, it's terrible, but there are people who are in there. I know somebody right now, actually a good friend of mine, his wife's got cancer and she's like 24. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, that's not even fair. That's just wrong, you know? And then like three kids, it's so sad. It's so terrible. So, anyway, I don't know. Hopefully you can enjoy life out there as much as you can. Go have fun. Don't take yourself too seriously. I think probably the biggest lesson that I've always learned is, probably the biggest lesson I would say is life is all about two steps forward, one step back. But you kind of have to look at those one step backs as just part of the game. Like, I think sometimes we get so frustrated, like, it feels like I'm always getting set back. It's like, that's part of the game, man. Like, you got to play the game and enjoy that. So somebody here says one should stop drinking alcohol if they want to have a productive last 20 years. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I pretty much am totally off alcohol. Which is, I've actually inspired my dad as well to stop drinking alcohol. He's, how old is he now? 40, he's coming up on 71. That's probably pretty good. Somebody here writes, Doge from the future, if you appreciate these morning meetings, send a couple bucks. Oh, well, thank you. Appreciate that. That's really nice of you to say. In the old days, the husband was the hunter for food, but in modern times, the husband is the hunter for our family. The hunter is for money. Tammy saying that here. I think that's where the talk about priorities, but Kevin, we need you. I mean, I'm not going anywhere. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying don't work, right? I want to be very clear about that. I'm not saying don't work. I'm just saying, like, work hard, but then also have fun. Like, go do something. Like, let me put it this way, okay? So last year, okay, I'll give you a little bit more background here. I think this might be interesting. So in 2021, I was thinking about creating a stock brokerage. It was going to be a combination between probably M1 Finance and Webull, something like in the middle. And we were going to do like automatic wheeling of options and some really cool things. The problem is when we were in discussions with both FINRA and Apex, as well as some other institutions and market makers, we're realizing there's no money to be made in the stock brokerage business. I don't like starting businesses that can't make any money. Like yesterday, I was researching, you know, credit cards backed by home equity. And I found a company that I won't reveal, but I basically think is a fraud. And I think they're a fraud because they have so little demand. I don't think there's money to be made in that because I don't think homeowners care about credit cards secured to their home equity. I think they're like, hell no, my home equity's sacred. Like, F off. So if there's no money to be made in something, I'm not going to do it. So, for example, on this idea of starting a stock brokerage, after my campaign for governor in 21, we were in that idea for about 2.5 months and we killed the idea because A, we saw an inflection, a massive inflection in the market. That's back when I shorted ARK K at like $100. And we saw a massive inflection in the market. We figured it would be near impossible to get people to sign up for a brokerage in a bad market. So we killed that idea. Like a month later, lo and behold, Sam Bankman-Fried's on CNBC getting interviewed by Becky Quick talking about how he wants to create a stock brokerage. Now, in hindsight, we're like, of course that fraud wanted to find more ways to attract capital. But Becky Quick, she's like, hey, well, how are you going to make money in a stock brokerage? And he's like, oh, we're not. It's a lost leader. And it's like, well, good thing we didn't go down that road. I mean, we figured that out ourselves, right? But I don't want to do businesses that don't make money. So in 2022, instead, I launched businesses that I think have very real potential in the long term to make a great deal of money. I mean, no guarantees, but I mean, think about what I did in 2022. I launched an ETF, which I think is a phenomenal financial product. And you can learn more about it at mekevin.com. I launched a real estate startup, which I think is going to make a lot of money. And I didn't do that because I wanted to work less, right? I did it because I got to ring the bell at the New York Stock Exchange. I get to do a startup. I get to employ a lot of people and share the visions that I have for both stocks and real estate with millions of people. Like, that's exciting to me. But that excitement also helps me unlock excitement just in regular life, whether it's you know, going paintballing with the team or whatever. Like, actually, again, work hard, play hard. Obviously, I bought a plane in 2022, which was really phenomenal because it's basically free for the first year, which is amazing, thanks to the tax benefits. But, you know, a lot of people look at that, they're like, oh, you're just trying to finance the lifestyle. If you look, it's like, if anything, that thing has made me work a lot harder. Because I travel for work so much. But the beauty about it is it really has enabled me to be very, very quick. I could get a lot done very quickly. For example, I'll give you an example here. We did some math. I'll give you some PJ math, okay? Now, some people are like, oh, Kevin, you're just trying to justify the job. I don't have to justify jack shit to anybody. Like, plane is mine. I don't have to justify anything to anyone. But we did some quick math, which I think would be very interesting to people. So where did I write it down? I have it written down on one of these notepads. I'm gonna find it. But basically, what we did is anybody watch the original Apprentice, where you kind of get assigned a task and then you have to compete against other people to see how they do? Well, I just did that with four employees, because so I've probably traveled, I think we're at somewhere around 100 flights already for the year. 98 of them are probably work related, maybe two aren't, but anyway, so out of 98 flights for the year, I've gotten to a lot of places and I've taught a lot about real estate and what we're looking for and what we're doing. And so what I did in sort of an apprentice style, do I charter my plane? Hell no. No, dude, that's my pee-pee. I don't want anybody on my pee-pee. Anyway, so what I did was this apprentice style challenge where I challenged four employees to travel commercially to two different cities each and then report back to me. And we went to, basically we covered eight different cities. Two people went to, or one person went to two cities times four, right? That's basically eight people. And they had 7 days to learn everything they can, meet agents, and basically do what I do and implement what I do in person and learn everything they can. And it's really different when you're just watching Kevin doing something to basically getting thrown in the fire pit and having to do it yourself. You actually learn a lot, right? That's the point. But what I thought was really interesting is I compared how long it would take and how much it would cost to send one person to two cities four times over a 7 day period, and how fast could we do it if I loaded everybody into my plane and basically I drove the bus. I don't fly, but we did it with me, the Kevin version. And so here were the results, which was really interesting. So the results were that it took 7 days to have eight different cities visited. That means it took it took 1 day of traveling on each, for each travel day was a full travel day. I mean, like getting to the airport, being early, Ubering to the airport, checking in, TSA, waiting, then being bound by the flight time, then getting to the location, checking into the hotel, all of that, right? It was a 7 day process. Because when you compare that to what I can do with our plane, it's about 60% faster. I'll give you the example in just a moment. But we added everything up, and I think the total cost was about $8,000, maybe $8,500, right around there, was the total cost. And what we got basically was one person saw two cities, and so it worked out to roughly about $2,000 a person for 7 days, which is actually pretty good. I mean, some of them were using scooters to get around because the goal was how inexpensively can you do it? That was the goal. I mean, we're talking, you know, $125 hotels, keeping it as cheap as possible. That's part of the challenge. It's like, how efficient can you be? But some of the plane tickets are like $700 to go from California to Texas right now. It's like $700. It's insane. So anyway, what we did is we said, all right, four people saw eight cities for $8,000. That works out to $1,000 per person per city, right? The problem is, one person only experienced two cities, right? So if one person wanted to see all of those cities, the costs would have been a lot more. Not so great. I mean, yeah, you could do double occupancy in some of the rooms, but still you'd be traveling. So then what we realized is, well, what if we took my plane? And so we looked at the variable costs of the plane. And if we took my plane, we could stop in 2 to 3 cities a day. And the reason we can do that is because we could take off and land whenever the hell we want. So we could take off at 6 a.m., land somewhere at 9, have a rental car there, check out the city, properties, meet agents, on the plane, next city, on the plane, next city. And we could probably do that entire 7 day itinerary in 3 days, instead of 6 nights in 2 nights, instead of multiple Ubers, a few rentals at the various different places we would go. And so what we figured is the variable costs for the plane and Ubers and the fewer hotels and fewer dinners and stuff, we would be able to do the entire 7 day trip in 3 days with 2 nights only. It would cost us about $17,000, so a little more than twice. So it is more expensive. Initially, it looks more expensive, but watch this. A little bit more expensive, so let me write this down because I think it'd be easier to visualize. I also think it's very interesting. So you write it down. So what did $8,000 get you? Well, $8,000 got you one person seeing two cities, 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 right? And that took 7 days. That's what about $8,000 got you. Well, in 3 days, so in substantially less time, it might cost $18,000, but what happened? Now all of a sudden you could have, I would be along, right? So you could actually have five people seeing eight cities. So now all of a sudden, if you figure five people are seeing eight cities, take a look at this. 18,000 divided by 8 actually works out to $2,200. Oops, let me do this. $2,250 per city divided by 5. It would only cost $450 per city for 5 people to see all of these cities. $450 per city. Whereas over here, people spent $1,000 per city. Now, how much of a mind F is that? That, I think, is pretty remarkable. Now, this doesn't work if only, like, one person is traveling, right? And it's also worth noting that I pay for the plane myself because it's my plane. I pay for it, and I don't bill my real estate startup for my jet. I pay for it. And I'm going to do that as long as possible. So what's beautiful about this, though, is I realize, I go, my gosh, we are more than twice as efficient in terms of how fast we could actually see real estate. We're more than twice as efficient with this plane. But on top of that, more people are able to get to the places, and we're actually able to do them for a cheaper per city cost because you can load the plane up with like 9 people. Imagine if there were 9 people instead of 5. So it's really incredible, just the efficiency that you can get out of this. So these are the risks that I've taken in 2022. And yeah, I mean, there are cool things that come out of it. You know, it's obviously fun to do it that way because it's so much more effective. But these are just the risks that I like taking because, A, I think they're good business risks, but they also combine with the idea of like life. Like, dude, if I want to see 4 cities, do I want to be away from my family for 7 days? Hell no. And quite frankly, in 7 days, the people who traveled only saw 2 cities. So if I wanted to see 8 cities commercial, I'd probably be gone for a month when I could literally see 8 cities in 3 days, right? It's kind of remarkable. So tying that all back to like life, to me, I think I'm making the best possible business decisions, while at the same time looking at life and being like, "Scheisse, you know, you want to do what you can to be as efficient as possible, so you could not only run the businesses you want to create the success that you're trying to create, but you also want to do it in a way where you're not miserable doing what you're doing." I don't think it would be possible to do my real estate startup without a plane because we have to be places fast. We can't be beholden to a schedule of commercial air traffic, and we can land pretty much wherever we want with this sucker, which is great. We could get into small airports. We only need a 4,000-foot runway. That saves a lot of time, so it's really exciting. Anyway, so that's some insight. I want to look at some of the comments that y'all have. Nobody rides my jet. Nobody gets charged to ride my jet. That doesn't exist. Actually, I think one of us just visited Minneapolis. So let's see here. Kevin Airlines. No, God, no. No, 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 no. Time does not equal money. Everybody has time, but not everybody has money. Well, I mean, I think that depends on the situation that you're in, right? Like personally, when I was broke and I, you know, went to, I was working at Jamba Juice, I would go to all the grocery stores with a coupon, right? Like today, I'd probably just use Walmart delivery because Walmart Plus, it's like free delivery. It's like, why would you waste your time doing that? I don't know why people keep asking about charters. I don't do charters. Love the house hack videos. Thank you. Let's see. Arm and a leg. Travel's annoying, man. It's really difficult. Your relative lived in a development with a runway in his backyard. Now that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah, you could put a plane back there. That's amazing. Oh my gosh, a plane absolutely increases productivity. Massive increase of productivity. It's insane. Well, because the other thing too is when you're on an airline, and I've been on airlines plenty. Okay, so it's like it is what it is. But when you're on an airline, after you fly, you're tired. You're exhausted. Like, your productivity is like zero that day. Whereas my little baby plane, I feel like energized when I get off of it because I get so much done on it because everything's where I want it. Like, I keep an iPad and a laptop on there. You know, the pilots bring me my newspapers. It's like, I still read the newspapers. It's phenomenal, just the productivity of being able to do what you want. And sometimes, I mean, it doesn't happen often, but we can, in theory, be mid-air, and we're like, yeah, let's go to a different airport. You know, it's like crazy. You don't actually wrap planes, you paint planes. Yes, we have two dedicated pilots that are on salary. How much is maintenance? You know, if you want to know how much maintenance is on a plane, you should not think about owning a plane. It's insane. Let's just put it this way. The plane's probably going to cost somewhere around $2.4 million a year to own and operate. But we are going to paint on a new tail number onto it, which will be pretty cool. Just make a teleporter. I know, right? Anyway, so I wanted to share that. You know, it's, do I regret not having a wedding experience? No, I actually don't. Because, see, I think a big wedding experience would have probably tanked our ability to buy real estate. And the most important thing you should do when you're younger is buy real estate. Now, don't get me wrong. That is counter to what I'm saying here. Like, this experience versus, like real estate, right? But I also had an experience. You know what I did? Instead of spending 40 or 50 grand on a wedding, which gets you, you know, one or two nights, we did a 10-day honeymoon and a Mediterranean cruise for like $5,000. So in other words, instead of spending 50 grand on a wedding or 40 grand on a wedding where everything is overpriced, the photographers, the videographers, the wedding cakes, the venue, everything is a ripoff in the wedding industry. And I'm sorry, if you work in the wedding industry, honestly, you know deep down inside, it's a ripoff. But that's okay. Like, people are willing to pay it. So I don't blame you for charging the prices. Other people are willing to pay it. Make your money, man. It's fine. It's okay for you to make money. I'm not going to do that, though. Instead, I'm like, I'm going to have a bitchin' vacation for, you know, $5,000 or $10,000, maybe all in, right? I'm going to have a bitchin' 10-day vacation, and it's going to be the best thing ever. But I'm going to spend zero on the wedding, and I'm going to spend $10,000 on my honeymoon. Because why do I want to entertain everybody else when instead I'm going to have a bitchin' vacation and a bitchin' experience with now my wife and buy a house? So sorry, okay? Don't ask me about weddings, man. Anyway, I got to get over to the Elite Hustlers live stream. So I appreciate y'all being here. Y'all are great. I know there's some haters who watch, but you know what? The haters are watching, which is honestly an honor. It's okay, man. You know, it's life. You know, some people want to punch me in the face. That's fine. You know what? Even the people who hate, you can still go to StreamYard. Go to metkevin.com/StreamYard. Sign up for one of the best streaming platforms ever. You put cool things up on screen, like this is a paid promotion, sponsorship. But, hey, StreamYard rocks. Check them out.